A weekly pulse on all things green and gold with the guy who's been on the beat 29 seasons, three-time Wisconsin sports writer here, Jason Wilde. I'm Alex Strofe with you. Episode 4 of Weekly Wilde ahead of the Week 3 matchup for the Green Bay Packers in Tennessee against the Titans. I'm headed down to Nashville tomorrow, Jason. Going to be a really fun little car ride down there, but looking forward to likely seeing quarterback Jordan Love back in action after only missing one game. We will see. What's going on, man? What a week.
Likely?
I feel confident that he will play, yes.
Huh, okay.
Well, let's start there. Jordan Love returns to practice Wednesday. He is limited, as Matt LaFleur said about 87 times in his press conference. But nonetheless...
What does that tell you? What does that tell you?
It tells me that they're playing it safe. But I would imagine he's not out there 12 days removed from an MCL sprain if there's not a real chance he plays. And after hearing Rob Domofsky Monday on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy say last week was no charade, that there was a good shot he could have played against Indianapolis, I feel better about his chances playing a week later against Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were people that thought he could have played, but I don't think... we'll see. I don't enjoy this part of the job. I think when you repeatedly say he was limited, and then... somebody asks Jordan Love what he did in practice, and he says, I was limited. You might as well just get a big neon sign that says, I didn't take any team snaps. And while I think it's a great, encouraging sign that he's out there with his knee brace and his compression sleeve over his knee brace and all the way up and down his left leg, I don't think you can say that he is likely to play. I think that is an overstatement. I think that he could play. I'm going to go back to what I was told from the very beginning, which was not the Colts, not the Titans, maybe the Vikings, and if not the Vikings, the Rams. Now, I don't know who makes these decisions. I don't think it's not just the medical staff, maybe the player or people around the player. I don't know. All I know is that he did talk about a lot of the things that he has to be able to do. You know, there's a lot of boxes that have to be checked. He's the one who said that. And to say on Wednesday after he ran through some drill work, that he's likely to play against the Titans, I'm not comfortable going that far.
Well, I guess I shouldn't say that's a fact. That's how I feel, right? And that's the difference between me and you, Jason. You are not a fan. You are a very well-respected... yes, accurate. But you're a well-respected beat reporter. I'm just a fan, right? Like, I see the sign that he practices Wednesday, and that gives me... and maybe it's fake faith because I'm going to Nashville and I would like to see the starting quarterback play rather than the Malik Willis revenge game. So I am by no means reporting that he will likely play. I am giving you my gut feeling after seeing Wednesday. You're the one with the information. Yes.
It's not your gut feeling. It's your hope. It's your hope. You're going to the game. You want Jordan Love to play. Just say it.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. And hope, of course, as we know, as you say many times on Wilde and Tausch, is not a strategy. You mentioned something there that caught my ear. You said this is the part of the job I don't like. I'm assuming you're referring to injuries and the speculation that goes into injuries.
Yeah, yes, the speculative nature of injuries. Like, and look, I firmly believe that the NFL is going to have a major shift that they should have already had when it comes to injury reporting. Right now, first of all, let's be honest. The injury report, if you go back in history, the reason they have an injury report to begin is because of gambling. It is because of concerns about inside information and bringing the injury report above the table instead of under the table, because they needed to be able to handle that. If that's the case, now more than ever, it has to be even more transparent. And while it is hard for people to change the way they operate, certainly football coaches are not very adept They can change up their offense. They can change their scheme in game. They can do all kinds of things, but they are creatures of habit when it comes to this type of stuff. With the proliferation of daily fantasy and with legal wagering on their games, I personally believe that they're going to have to change the way they do this. They can't play these types of games, right? Like, I think they should, I think the injury report should be required to say whether or not a player took team snaps or not, because this is a little way that you can kind of create hope in people that are traveling to Nashville, even if it's not true hope. And so if that, let's say this isn't traveling to Nashville. Let's say this is about you wanting to bet, you know, your life savings, which, you know, you're early in your life, so it's not that big yet, but still.
No, it is not.
It's not. Mine isn't either, by the way, and I'm a lot further along in life. But if you want to make a decision like that and it's legal, you should have access to all the information that leads to you making whatever decision you make. And so, you know, again, I don't think that this is that nefarious or anything like that, but I do think that there is some maybe false hope that's generated from a guy practicing. I mean, look, Marshawn Lloyd practiced during the week leading into Brazil, mm-hmm. and then he didn't play. Then obviously he practiced again and did play. So maybe, I'm not saying Jordan Love and Marshawn Lloyd are on the same schedule, but a lot of times a guy will practice to kind of ramp up and then not play in the game and then practice the following week and then play in the game. So I know you want him to play while you're walking down Broadway and stopping in at some honky tonks and listening to some music.
Yeah.
But the bottom line, I don't know if it's likely. I would just say it's possible.
All right, I will take that for what it's worth. Now, I must mention, if you're watching on the YouTube side or listening on the podcast side or 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, behind you, Jason, you have a huge wall of memorabilia, bobbleheads, etc., figurines, if you will. Those are called assets, so that would actually play into your life savings. And you've got quite a bit of them.
I don't know how valuable they are, though. There's a few that are valuable. That's more squandered money that I would probably have to acknowledge, right? Like my collector nature is probably not healthy, and yeah, if I go onto eBay, I could probably sell some stuff, and maybe I could go to Nashville with you if I turned it around quickly enough.
That's called the Nashville fund, like the little jar I've had sitting in my kitchen for the last couple months.
What do you put in there, though? Because you have, like, direct deposit.
Yeah, I do. So I don't really carry cash. So if I go to, like, a local establishment, I typically take out cash so I can tip in cash. And if I whatever I have left over. So, like, last night I was at the Brewer game popping bottles of champagne. Actually, I was watching the team pop bottles of champagne. I was not popping champagne. But I had a couple cash for the shuttle. So I have whatever's left over. That goes in the Nashville fund. I don't know if you're frozen or just ignoring me, but we'll roll on with that look nonetheless. Oh, no, not frozen. You're turning your head. What?
So do you were tipping the shuttle driver?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Okay.
Good for you.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate that. All right. I do want to talk about this because, you know, coming out of week two, all of the attention's been on the head coach. Matt LaFleur drew up a really, really solid game plan offensively, whether it was the misdirections, the end-arounds, the pre-snap motion. Everything was really impressive for Matt LaFleur. The way they were able to establish the run early in that game, Josh Jacobs close to 100 yards in the first quarter on the ground. And they led throughout, and that was really what you needed. And I think the one note that we talked about last Thursday, knowing Malik Willis would be the starter going into that game against Indianapolis, was don't turn over the ball. And he didn't. Josh Jacobs did on the goal line, but Malik Willis did not turn over the ball. And ultimately, the Packers walk away with their first win of the year, 16-10 over the Colts. I asked you last week, who is more to prove, Matt LaFleur or Malik Willis? You leaned Willis. I leaned LaFleur. I thought they both earned their keep, certainly, Sunday against Indianapolis. But what did you make of the game plan for Matt LaFleur, specifically offensively, Jason?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was exquisite. It was phenomenal. Is it repeatable? I don't know, right? I mean, that was kind of my point to him on Monday was, you know, and I kind of joked about it, but you know, they have the 24-hour rule in the NFL. You could celebrate a win for 24 hours. And literally, it was 3 o'clock when he talked, which was beyond the 24 hours after that game had ended. So I said, yeah, great game plan. Great, way to go. What are you going to do now? Because the Tennessee Titans watched the film. The Tennessee are sitting there going, there ain't no way in HE double hockey sticks are we letting these guys do to us what they did to the Colts. So now what? And to me, that's what makes this, especially if Malik Willis starts again, what makes this game so fascinating is how do you keep him from being put in positions where he may make the catastrophic mistake and still do things other than running the football? Because, look, it was a thing of beauty. And Matt LaFleur deserves all the credit in the world for how good of a plan he and Steno and the whole crew came up with. I'm not questioning that at all. What I'm questioning is, what's next? Because as brilliant as it was, I feel fairly confident. You know, you want to say that it's likely that Jordan Love's going to play. I think it's highly unlikely that the Green Bay Packers will have 237 rushing yards at halftime on Sunday. Can't rule it out because I don't have a crystal ball, but I think it's probably not going to happen. So how do you conjure up a game plan to win the game? I mean, it's an extension of the question that I was asking him and Adam Stenovich a week earlier, which is, how do you put together a game plan when everyone in the building, including Gus Bradley and the Indianapolis Colts, know you want to run the football? Well, we got our answer. You gussy up all your different runs with misdirections and fakes and pre-snap motion, and you confuse the hell out of your opponent. Is that going to work again? I would think they're going to utilize some of those things again, no doubt about that, right? Because even if you've seen them on film, you still, when you're reacting in real time as a defender, that stuff still works. So there's going to be a component to that. I don't question that. But I don't think it's going to be as effective as it was against the Colts, who clearly never saw that stuff coming. Like, they had the Packers lined up Jaden Reed in the backfield in week one. I mean, he's done it a couple of times since he got here last year, but certainly not like with split backs with Josh Jacobs next to him. Like, those were all innovations that I'm sure were in the playbook, but they pulled them out because of the situation. So I'm eager to see what they've been conjuring up this week, and what they're going to do when Malik Willis starts on Sunday.
Is that what your gut tells you, Jason? Malik Willis will start Sunday?
That is my expectation. But again, I am more than open to being wrong. And I hope for your sake I am. I hope for Malik Willis's sake I'm not. I hope Malik Willis goes in there, because he kept telling us on Wednesday that he said care less, but That saying, I think, is supposed to be, I couldn't care less. Because if you could care less, then you should care less. that he could care less that he was playing the Titans. Again, he's very smart not to provide bulletin board fodder. But, you know, he doesn't trust us. He doesn't know us. We talked last week about maybe a lack of a less than great experience that he might have had with the Nashville media. I would just say this, somewhere in his heart, I'm not here to tell him how to feel, but there's got to be somewhere where he's looking, now that he's especially on this team with Jordan Love, and going, you know, because he said, when we're talking to him about his three starts in Nashville, or for the Titans, and he said, you got me saying Nashville now because you're going to Nashville. He said very specifically, I wasn't ready, but I had to play. Uh-huh. He said that. That mm-hmm. was his own admission. So there is part of me, and I have to think a part of him, that is looking, going, I wonder what would have happened if they hadn't fired John Robinson, the GM, and I had gotten to sit for 2 years like Jordan Love. I mean, maybe not three, but 2 years. If he sits for 2 years, he's their starter for this game against the Packers. And look, I don't mean to be whatever, but Will Levis does not look like Tom Brady to me.
No.
He's got his head coach saying, what the F are you doing to him on the field? So there has to be a tiny part of him somewhere that he doesn't want to share with us, that he's like, you know, I really wonder what things would have been like for me if they'd have been able to do for me what the Packers did for Jordan.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I think it's natural to feel that way if you're Malik Willis. But I am curious, if we get the Malik Willis revenge game, does he walk in there with an extra chip on his shoulder? Is he going off script more because he wants to win against the team that ultimately gave up on him and traded him away for a seventh-round pick just 3.5 weeks ago? So I am curious if it will be the Malik Willis revenge game. The good news is either way, and this is once again me being a fan and not the professional you are, Jason, it helps the Packers are playing a team that is an utter dumpster fire here through 2 weeks of the season. The Titans look really bad.
So they've lost each of their games by the same score, right? 24-17. And I think dumpster fire, you know, they're also – couldn't they have won both those games?
Yeah,
like they made catastrophic. Like,
yes.
Will Levis made colossal mistakes.
That's
like
my point.
That you're talking about. Like, so if they conjure up some sort of game plan where Will Levis doesn't screw up to beat the band, you know, they're not that far away. Like, they're not Chicago White Sox bad.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's only been two games. It hasn't been 140 like it has been for the Chicago White Sox.
Very fair.
So I guess
only 80 games under 500. Yeah, so,
yeah. I guess I hear you. But Brian Callahan ain't Matt LaFleur, Jason. And I know it's very early in his head coaching tenure, and maybe he'll learn some things like Matt LaFleur clearly has over his first 5-plus years, now 6 years the head coach of the Packers. But these are two very different head coaches, and I trust one more a heck of a lot more than the other when they're operating with comparable assets, to use a term from earlier, at the quarterback position if Malik Willis starts. I trust what LaFleur can do with Willis a hell of a lot more than I can trust what Callahan can do with Levis, especially with what we've seen through the first 2 weeks. Now, the Titans do have a nice defensive front. Their defensive line is pretty solid. Outside of that, nobody scares me. Their offensive weapons would have been a great offense in 2019 with DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley and Tony Pollard, right? But it isn't 2019. It's 2024. I like what the Packers are cooking with a heck of a lot more than the Titans.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm just saying, you know, when you're playing on the road, when you're playing with a backup quarterback, if that's what they end up doing, lots of things can go wrong.
Yeah.
And for as amazingly as everything played out on Sunday, I mean, they still only won by 6, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there was still, you know, and you know, I would say Anthony Richardson, another young quarterback, certainly helped them with his inaccuracy. They had a couple of drops. Like, that was the domination in the run game, I think, leads us to view that game a little bit differently than it all would have been. But again, you're right. Like, it's not like they're facing the 49ers this week. I don't know who the 49ers have left to play right now. So maybe that's not as hard as it was. But this is really interesting to me to see how it's going to play out on Sunday.
I'm right there with you. All right, last thing before we get to four downs is the defense. You have often said it's a line I've stolen from you. You get what you emphasize, which I'm sure you stole from somebody else, but you get what
oh,
you
yeah,
emphasize.
That's not, I did not. I, oh, I'm Mike not, McCarthy taught me that.
Yeah, I'm not giving you credit for inventing it. I'm just saying I've heard you say it many times, and I've stolen it from you in the past.
You also get what you tolerate.
Oh, is that another McCarthyism?
That's the corollary. You get what you emphasize. You also get what you tolerate.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh, yeah, put that to use next time.
I will. Next episode 5, we will reference that. You get what you tolerate.
Maybe that's the new name of the show. you get what you emphasize. You also get what you tolerate.
Yeah, Jason Wilde tolerates Alex Stroh's dumbass. Jeff Hafley's defense. I mean, he emphasized turnovers and takeaways all offseason long. They've got 5 interceptions through 2 games. This is a team that had 7 interceptions all year. What do you make of the ability to create turnovers? Now, that 5th interception at the end of the game was on a Hail Mary, but it still counts in the stat sheet. 5 interceptions in two games is quite the turnaround for this defense that struggled in that category a year ago.
Yeah, look, vision and break, right? We've heard that phrase time and again. We're seeing the dividends. And Matt LaFleur, I thought, you know, we're going to talk to Jeff Hafley a little bit later today, but I thought Matt LaFleur did a great job of explaining that that vision doesn't just mean you see the ball coming on the guy you're defending. It also means you've got vision when a guy airmails a pass, which is exactly what Xavier McKinney's option was last Sunday, right? Like Richardson airmailed that. He made a good play on the ball because he saw it coming. So that has definitely factored in. I think they've also upgraded their talent. So that obviously factors in as well. But like, look, this defense still has plenty to work its way through. Let's not pretend that it has suddenly morphed into the 85 Bears or anything. But this is what I tried to say after the Philly game in Brazil. I say it again now. Like, you see reasons for optimism. You see reasons for being encouraged and hopeful. And that's great because, frankly, previously, the 3 years before this, you just saw reasons to be concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, well, at least, hey, they won anyway, right? This is not this. I think the arrow is pointing this way. And, you know, I'll give you an example. I want to believe, because there's people that are getting after Quay Walker this week,
mm-hmm.
which I get, right? Like, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be questioned or criticized or anything like that. It's a generic ice drink.
I was wondering what you were cracking open at 8:32 a.m. as we record this. Yeah.
I don't drink at all. But my point is that I want to see what Quay Walker's capable of. And I think he's capable of more in this defense than he was in the last defense. At the same time, he's still struggling to kind of find his way, right? You see him, he will not be in the right spot. He won't fill the right gap. Or he, like, takes kind of an odd route to get to where he's supposed to be. And by the time he gets there, it's too late. The guy's already gone through right. the gap. Or he's getting blocked and he's not getting off the block. Like, I want to believe that he is more than what we have seen from him. And I am willing, not that he needs it from me, but I'm willing to give him some grace that in a new scheme, he is going to be a better player. And it hasn't happened yet, but that it still could happen. But this is the expectation game. Like, the guy's a first-round pick.
Exactly.
Right? If he's a fourth-round pick, you know, I use Blake Martinez as the example or Isaiah McDuffie. Like, if you're a day-three pick, we don't have the same expectations. But that, hey, you get paid more, you get more expectations too. Mm-hmm. That's how this game works. And so they need him to be better. And quite frankly, we talked to Quay on Friday going into the game, and he said he needed to be. So I don't think that's changed for him. So I'm not writing him off. I know there are some fans that are down on him, and I get it. But I still, let's give him a little more time to grow before we decide that he's not good enough.
Let's go to four downs, and let's stick with that room for first down. You've talked and written at length this week about Eric Wilson, who's starting opposite of Quay Walker. Edrin Cooper, Tyron Hopper were both drafted. Eric Wilson has been the starter through 2 weeks, opposite Quay Walker at the linebacker position. He's a veteran. There's not a lot of those on this Packers team. What have you made of Eric Wilson, and what makes you, I don't want to say fascinated, but what makes him such an interesting story for you this week?
Yeah, so, you know, I've gotten obviously a lot of grief. I don't know why, because it's not my nickname. I'm not the one who came up with it. But LaFleur tells us that Bisaccia calls him Body Beautiful. And okay, that's funny. No one, like, only Bisaccia is calling him that. Like, I'm in the locker room. They call him Eric or E. I don't hear anybody say, hey, Body Beautiful, you ought to play ping pong?
Kind of a long nickname, yeah.
Yeah, it's a mouthful, no doubt. But I... And so I used it in my story. And look, he is like, I say this as just an observer of the human form. He is ridiculously cut up. Like he's like an Adonis. He just is. But here's why that matters. It's because Matt LaFleur said, and if Tausch had actually read the story, he would have seen why the Body Beautiful thing mattered. The line that that LaFleur delivered was, you don't look like that without being disciplined. And to me, you know, I'm not disciplined. You know, I had Lucky Charms last night at about 9 o'clock before I went to bed. Eric Wilson ain't doing that.
Yeah,
right?
That's fair.
And that's why I look like I do, and Eric Wilson looks like he does. And the reason it's important is because what has allowed a 30-year-old linebacker on a team where they're always going young, and by the way, they played Edgerrin Cooper some too in his spot.
Yep.
So like he did share snaps still. But what makes it significant is this is a guy who, because of the way he lives his life, because of the discipline it requires for eating healthy and workouts to look the way he does, that applies to how he plays the game of football and how he prepares. And that's what it's allowed him to be more than just the specialist guy who has led the team in special teams tackles each of the last 2 years. The reason he's on the field is because of that same discipline and that approach and life attitude that he has about why his body looks the way it does. So look, I like Eric a lot. I tend to gravitate for insight when I'm writing to veteran players, and there aren't many of them. So last year and then early throughout offseason stuff and even before the or after the first game, I talked to Eric Wilson a lot. I probably talked to Eric Wilson more than any other beat writer.
Really?
And now that he's got a role, he had a big group around him after the game. He had another group the other day, but only because veteran guys have that kind of history and knowledge and experience and information that make me smarter. So now when I see him, there's kind of a nod of, hey, I was ahead of the curve on this. And that's why I find him fascinating, is because what you just said, guys like him don't play on this team. Like, it's basically Preston Smith, and that's the list.
That's the list.
And Eric Wilson has now added himself to that list.
Fascinating. We got a couple minutes left, so let's fly through these last three, Jason. Second down, Braden Arvidsson is 6 for 8 from field goals through two games. The rookie kicker, who I guess this is a revenge game for him in some capacity as well, as he played the preseason with the Titans. Matt LaFleur kind of deferred to Goody when he was asked about the patience level for the rookie kicker, Braden Arvidsson. I know you can't perfectly predict this, but it sounds to me like they're going to stick with him until something catastrophic happens. Would you agree?
Look, LaFleur's answer was that's a Goody question, but if it's up to me, I'm going to have a lot of patience.
Yeah.
He really likes him. And so, but the fact of the matter is, if we're being honest about Braden Arvidsson, who, by the way, has nothing but really good things to say about the Titans. And I don't think for him it's a revenge game, because he went there knowing Nick Folk was their kicker. I mean, they did right by him without question. He was ready to sign on to their practice squad and develop with them, and the Packers claimed him. But the bottom line is, he's 6 for 8. He's 3 for 4 on field goals at each of his first two NFL games. And he is doing the same thing that Anders Carlson got fired for, which is missing one kick a game. Now, does he deserve more opportunity to develop? Yes, he does. No doubt about it. But the issue here is they got sick of Anders Carlson always waiting for that. When is he going to miss?
Right.
And then that's what happened in the final preseason game, right? He booted a 54-yarder. He made all his extra points. Hey! Oh, here he pushed a 32-yarder wide right.
Missed a chip shot, right.
The issue with him was you were just every game you went in, LaFleur with his line about praying. The real reality was every game you went in waiting for when is the miss going to come?
Yeah.
But he missed 10 in the final 12 games. He missed 1 in 10 of the 12 games. So I'm not down on Narvison either. I'm with Matt LaFleur on that. But the facts are what they are, and he's doing the same thing Anders Carlson did. Carlson just did it over a longer stretch.
Yeah, and hopefully Narvison can clean it up, because he's got a huge leg, and he's been fun to watch. So we will see as the season rolls on here, heading into Week 3. Third down, heading into Week 3. The Minnesota Vikings atop the NFC North, they are 2-0. Following a win over the San Francisco 49ers, albeit the injured 49ers, but still beating the 49ers, who many view as the favorite in the NFC in Week 2. Do you view the Minnesota Vikings as a real threat in the NFC North?
You get off to a 2-0 start and you beat the 49ers, I don't care how they're constituted, you should at least take notice of them, right? Now, I didn't didn't look like the ESPN NFL power rankings and the NFL Nation folks are believers. But look, they are finding a way, right? And Kevin O'Connell is kind of the new Matt LaFleur, right? He's that young coach who in his first year, they won a ton of close games and they made the playoffs. Now, last year they backslid and now they're figuring things out. But look, if you get a quarterback like Sam Darnold, who is not a Hall of Fame quarterback, but was a high pick, so obviously has talent, and you figure out a way to fit him into your system. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, in some ways it's been great for him that McCarthy had that reconstructive surgery on his meniscus, because he's not looking over his shoulder to see if they're thinking about playing the first round pick.
Right.
That's got to be freeing for him. So, no, you know, do I think they're going to be like a 12-win team? No, but for those that thought that, well, that's two automatic wins over the Vikings this year for the Packers, I don't think you can feel that way, because they do have something that's working for them so far.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about the Vikings, obviously, coming up next week as the Packers get ready for their first in-division game, week four, at Lambeau Field against the Vikings. So we'll talk about that plenty more, I'm sure, next week. Will the Vikings be 3-0? We'll find out. But Darnold, very intriguing start to the season for him. Fourth down is as simple as this. It's what we started the show with. I know you're not in the prediction business, and I'm not going to hold you to this one way or another, but I say he will play. Talking about Packers quarterback Jordan Love Sunday at Tennessee. That's my prediction. What say you?
They play at noon. Packers will have somebody at quarterback. And we'll find out about 90 minutes before kickoff whether or not it can be Jordan Love or not. Look, what I don't like about this is I believe that my job is to convey to you and our listeners, my readers, et cetera, facts, mm-hmm. information, mm-hmm. not guesses, not predictions, not, I wonder. That's not what I can certainly, I try to deliver insight. There's occasional opinion in there, but like, this is just guesswork. Like, the fact that he practiced yesterday, is that good? I can tell you that the fact is Jordan Love was limited in practice yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean? I'm not sure. I personally think that he's still a week away, and I'm basing that on things I was told right after the injury. If there is the possibility that he is able to do something sooner, and good for him. But I want to emphasize this. I brought this up to him when we were talking yesterday with him in his locker, or really in front of Isaiah McDuffie's locker, which forced Isaiah McDuffie to get dressed somewhere else. He wasn't here yet, but in 2014, Aaron Rodgers tears his calf late in the season. And they are a Super Bowl contending team. And so, as Aaron Rodgers did, and having built up a level of respect and expectation, having been the starting quarterback for the previous, whatever it was, 7 years at that point, he played through it. But he was a statue in those subsequent games.
Totally.
And Bulaga tells the story of the NFC Championship game and everything we remember from that loss to Seattle. Well, another piece of that, which was a decade ago now, is that on the drive when they tie the game to force overtime and then never get the ball back because of the old overtime rules, Rodgers has, there's a drop back where he has all kinds of space to run, and he knows he can't do it. Now, there were times during that game where he like would elude pressure and move in the pocket and come out of the pocket when he shouldn't have been because his leg was not capable of it, but he did it anyway on the adrenaline and whatever else. But he had a chance to run. He couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Maybe they win the game if his calf is healthy, because then he gains like 30 yards and then he throws a touchdown and they win. Right. And everyone's legacy has changed because they make the Super Bowl that year. My point is that I mentioned that to Jordan yesterday, because the question is, can Jordan play as a pocket passer and not move in the pocket as much? Because He, like Rodgers before him, he is not a running quarterback. He is not a running quarterback. Do I pretend like it never stopped? I keep going.
Yeah, I guess we might as well acknowledge we are using. I'm cheap, so we're using the free version of Zoom that only lets you go 40 minutes, and we went past 40 minutes, so it kicked us out. And now, before you jump on Wilde and Tausch, I would like you. You were rolling. You were telling a great story, so I'd like you to continue.
So the point I was making is he's not Lamar Jackson.
Right.
Right. He doesn't run. He's not Jalen Hurts. He is certainly capable of running. We've seen that. But Jordan Love's, like Aaron Rodgers before him, before I was so rudely interrupted by Zoom drop dumping us, he moves to extend plays. Sometimes he takes off and runs. But what he really does is to do off-schedule opportunities to throw the football. And the question that I had for him is, can you play without that component of your game? Because you got to be able to move in the pocket to avoid pressure. This is me moving in the pocket.
Yeah, this is a good video.
Then you got to be able to get out. And I know you keep me in this little box, so I'm going to get out of the pocket and go, right? And so my point is that and I don't know if he's able to do that. And he doesn't know if he's able to do that. So are you willing to risk the $220 million man and get him out there definitely at least 1 week earlier than they expected, right? I mean, I still feel like if I was them, I would count my blessings that it wasn't his ACL and think it's a long season. I'm not going to rush him back. Yeah, do I want to win against the Titans? Sure. If I lose, this is being Matt LaFleur, if we lose, it's an AFC opponent. It's not really a tiebreaker issue. We're going to go and we're going to win some games this year. I just don't want to put him at further risk. He will be playing with a knee brace. He will be playing with a compression sleeve over his entire leg, over the knee brace. So he will be protected to some degree. But this whole idea of can he protect himself, it's more about, can he be himself?
Good point.
In addition to protecting himself? And I don't know the answer to that. So that's why I'm a skeptic. But again, I am here to report the news. And if the news turns out to be he's active and he's playing, good for you, because you're going to be at the game. But that doesn't even guarantee it's the right decision. And I know there's a hell of a lot of people in that building that would feel pretty crappy if, with the knee brace and with the sleeve, he plays and either plays poorly or, heaven forbid, gets hurt.
Yeah.
And now you're suddenly looking at an 8-week Malik Willis show, and that's a whole different deal.
So we'll see.
I just want you to travel safely to Nashville.
Thank you.
I want you to have a good, responsible, fun, and I want you to get back here safely. That's all I'm looking for from you.
Very fatherly of you, Jason Wilde.
I prefer older brotherly at this point, even though I know your father and I are in similar age groups, but he got started earlier than I did.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess while you were talking there, my head went to, what if they lost last week? Does that change? You were role playing as Matt LaFleur. Does that change his mindset, your mindset, if they're 0-2 heading into this week rather than 1-1?
They say no. I don't believe them.
Okay.
Right? Like, it is so much better to be 1-1 than 0-2. And even though all these games count the same, and if you lose two games in weeks 12 and 13, no one's going, oh my God, they've lost. But that zero at the front of your record is hard to ignore. And then you're going into Nashville this week. So, yeah, I think it does, even if it's subconsciously, I think it helps them a ton. But no, somebody asked LaFleur exactly that. And somebody asked Jordan Love that too. Like, would you be more inclined to play if you were 0-2? And he poo-pooed that. But I think in the back of his brain, as a competitor who cares about his team, right, it's very hard to believe that he'd be saying, yeah, no, I'm not going to play. The doctors told me not to. If we go to 0-3 with Malik, that's the way the ball bounces. I doubt that Jordan would be that.
No, you're totally right. But teams that start the season 0-2 only have a 3% chance of making the playoffs. Baltimore and Cincinnati, probably the main two that will try to disprove that statistic, but we will see nonetheless. All right, really good stuff today. Jason Wilde on Twitter at Jason J. Wilde. You can hear him each and every weekday from 9 to noon on Wilde and Tausch. And you can hear him. I will not be on the show this weekend, but when that injury report comes out at 10:30 on Sunday morning, you can catch him with Gabe Neitzel, John Anderson, and Brian Bulaga.
So Gabe Neitzel is playing the role of Alex Strolf, or are we adding someone else?
Nope, just your normal cast, Sans you. I tried.
We got a long way to go, buddy.
We sure do.
A lot of work to do.
We sure do. Even with my incorrect English, you can find me on Twitter at Alex_Strolf. We will do this each and every Thursday at noon, weekly Wilde. Jason, good stuff, buddy. Really well done today.
Well, I'm glad you're pleased. I can't wait to see the final product, especially after we got kicked off of Zoom when I was making a really good point. So I'll tune in and watch.
Hey, man.
Afternoon today across our ESPN YouTube, ESPN Milwaukee YouTube channel. I want to make sure I get that right.
You did get it right. I really look forward to the moment when I see you run out of the pocket and run out of the screen with your childish humor. But nonetheless, there he goes out of the screen, and there we go off your screen. It's Weekly Wilde, back with you next week. We'll talk to you then after Packers-Titans.